You can listen to The Professional Left wherever you get your podcast, on Netroots Radio, or at our website, proleftpod.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for February 28th, 2020. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Cornfield Resistance, where an unsupervised room full of sugared up preschoolers are more orderly than a Democratic debate, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
I'm giving up worrying about the Democratic primaries for Lent.
Me too. Me too. Or at least for the next week or so. Because
yeah.
Ain't nobody vote. Well, you can vote early in Illinois, but our primary isn't until August, I think, or September. Isn't that right?
No. No. It's March 17th.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
It's 2 weeks after Super Tuesday.
I forgot. It's super, super duper Tuesday. And
I don't know. I don't know if we vote by ourselves or if there are other. I think there's a couple other primaries that day.
Yes.
But as I told you this morning, Driftglass,
yes.
Regardless of what we would say today about the Democratic race, it will be completely different seven days from now. So yes. I'm going to just not talk about that.
Well, as you know, Blue Gal, we strive for a timeless eternal quality in our commentary that can stand up to rigorous analysis like a day later. unlike pundits who like to forget what they said a week ago, you know, Beltway Iron Rule of David Brooks, right?
Yes.
It is forbidden to speak of what David Brooks wrote a week ago. It is mandatory to quote him today. So, right. Or the other way around. I'm sorry. It's our rule.
No, you're exactly right. You didn't. You had it exactly right.
Oh, good for me.
It is required that you quote David Brooks's latest column to him on television.
Yes.
And then he goes, yes, that's right. And as I said to you, I do give kudos this week to John Berman and Allison Camerota of CNN, who had on a gentleman from feels like a year ago, as usual. He had on a gentleman from Axios, this bombshell about Groundswell and Ginny Thomas.
Yes.
Coming up with a list of people to purge from the White House. Gosh, we've forgotten all about that. That was like Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
But Jonathan Swan of Axios was on, and they made fun of the fact that we're going to read your column from Axios to you now.
Yes, yes.
And they knew they were being ridiculous reading something that, you know, just to introduce a segment. So good on them for not doing that David Brooks trick of allow me to read your column to you and have you agree with it, you know?
Yeah. Well, and for those of you who are just joining us in the middle of the 2020 election, and we've never heard this podcast before, we've been doing this for 10 years now. And we've been blogging now for you and me for 15 years now.
And I'm a veteran of Kennedy 80.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So we were writing back in the days before there was a guy named David Gregory running Meet the Press.
Yeah.
So, you know, when people talk about Meet the Press and, I long for the days of Tim Russert, I don't, because I actually remember what he was like. And they skip right over this entire period in the middle where David Gregory was just as bad as Chuck Todd. This is not going to be the Chuck Todd podcast. I'm making the point. The point being, for a very long time, it is inexplicable to me, remains inexplicable to me, why certain New York Times house pets like David Brooks and Tom Friedman keep getting invited on television when they're always horribly wrong. And the reason is they have friends in the business. So for a long time, David Gregory, the host of Meet the Press, would either have David Brooks on and then read him his own column and ask him what he thought about it.
Right.
Or he wouldn't be there because he was busy jerking off to some other, you know, corner of the internet or some other television
or
channel.
Or he was taking a rich person's vacation so he could write about it. Yes.
And then David Gregory would just read his column anyway and ask other people what they thought about it. And so that's the universe. That's the media universe that we have been smothering under for decades. And so
lot of it has to do with it being content to fit bland content.
Yes.
To fill the space between pharma commercials. I mean, that's
absolutely
what it is. Yeah.
And there's no doubt that that's the business model is to there's a certain type of person that they want to push to the front of every cable news show, every Sunday morning show, every op-ed column in the country. And they're all the same people. That's the thing that just creeps me the hell out. They're all the same people, and they all have the same opinions. And this week, it really did feel like 2003 all over again.
Well, let's talk very specifically, because you tweeted something to the effect of warning people about David Brooks for 15 years apparently isn't enough.
Right.
And no, I said, no, it isn't. We have to podcast about this today, because last week, I'm going to quote what David Brooks said last week. His column was about how awesome Mike Bloomberg is, right?
Yes. Mike Bloomberg is, first of all, let's be fair. Mike Bloomberg is white and rich and has a penis, as you pointed out earlier today.
As far as I know.
therefore, he is all things David Brooks cares about and knows and loves. He's also 4 feet tall, which David Brooks is like 3.5 feet tall. So Mike Bloomberg's a very tall guy compared to David Brooks. But again, I cannot stress this enough. He's very, very rich, and there's nothing David Brooks admires more than rich white men. And so when rich white man came to the table and said, I'm going to put a big bag of money on the table and run for president, David Brooks just passed out from excitement. He was thrilled.
Well, and it's the don't touch my stuff party that David Brooks loves the most. So Bloomberg is in the race to protect rich people from the taxes that will inevitably come from a Sanders-Warren presidency.
And then Michael Bloomberg opened his mouth.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah. And Bloomberg shit the bed, right?
Twice. I mean, he's terrible.
And last week, Michael Bloomberg was the hero of David Brooks's column. And this week it was never Bernie Sanders. No, no.
And in between, Michael Bloomberg opened his mouth.
Yeah. And the poll, his poll numbers are now.
He's horrible.
Really?
He's just horrible. Dropping. He's not used to dealing with anybody. And in this way, he really is like David Brooks. He's not used to dealing with anyone who ever disagrees with him. David Brooks never, ever goes to a venue where anyone ever asks him any questions, any hard questions. He goes to only to venues where people praise him and stroke him and talk about a wise person he is, even when he's on opposite a putative liberal like E.J. Dionne or Mark Shields. Worst case, they sort of shake their waddles at him and just go, well, I'm going to disagree slightly with my good friend David Brooks here.
With my
friend
David Brooks.
And then they talk about some little marginal shit that they argue about. But no one – David Brooks lives in a media world that's built this way. It's built like by people like Mike Bloomberg and the Sulzberger family. It's a terrarium in which people like that are completely – insulated from the stupidity and catastrophe of their own opinions. So they get to keep blathering decade after decade. Brooks has been the New York Times, I think, now for 17 years. Tom Friedman, about whom we will talk in a little bit, has been at the New York Times for 28 years and has sucked every year of that. 28 years? 28 fucking years. Different hats, different bylines, but he's been pulling off the Sulzberger teat for 28 years. And so at this point, you have to know there's something just drastically wrong with the media where this could just keep going on and on and on and on and it never stops. So Mike Bloomberg made the mistake of standing up and opening his mouth and saying things and got gutted like a trout, mostly by Elizabeth Warren, bless her heart, as we discussed on last week's podcast. And so this week, now that his hero has been laid waste, now that Superman is dead, David Brooks is tearing his hair out and wrote an impassioned, terrified column entitled No, Not Sanders, Not Ever.
Because he's going to take away my stuff.
And David Brooks, in his 800 contractually obligated words, proceeds to condescendingly explain to poor, stupid liberals like me what it means to be a liberal. and really, just
does
traditional...
he mention Edmund Burke?
Yeah, I believe he does. traditional liberalism traces. Liberals believe. Why liberals do this? Liberals celebrate. Liberals are horrified. Liberals confront. Liberals see this. Liberals see that. It's the standard issue. If you've ever read David Brooks' columns, first of all, why ever would you? I'm here to do that for you. It's the same algorithm he uses to produce every other fucking column. It is there's a rhythm to it. It is banal. It is completely ignorant of the facts. It takes historical events and just mushes them together to make his stupid point. But at the end of the day, it is, I am never, ever, ever going to vote for Bernie Sanders, ever. And of course he's not, because Bernie Sanders is everything that David Brooks hates. Mm-hmm. It's not that Bernie Sanders is going to actually overthrow the system, although he might get away with it. He might not. I don't know. But David Brooks, this is why you never trust a never Trumper.
Mm-hmm.
Because they will say they have your back and they're with you in the foxhole right up until it gets real uncomfortable. And then they will stab you in the back and run away. So David Brooks is going to vote for Jill Stein, I guess.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you a question about that, though, because my understanding mm-hmm. from David Brooks' column is now that Bernie has some delegates under his wing, right? I mean, he's actually mm-hmm. going to the camp. We have no predictions to make, but
no, not at all.
He's going to the convention with some delegates for sure.
He's packing heat.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now David Brooks is saying, well, I would have voted for Warren.
Sure, I would have voted for Warren. I would have voted for Warren. And the screeching sound you hear are goalposts being dragged further down the field.
Right. That's a bunch of bullshit.
Remember, David Brooks lies all the time. David Brooks lies as often as Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity. He just does it in kind of a white shoe, aw shucks, soft voiced New York Times kind of way. But if you listen to, if you read him or follow him at any point over the course of his career, you see, oh shit, he's just bullshitting. He just pulls stuff out of his ass. He makes shit up. He makes people up and imputes opinions to them, opinions that invariably sort of gel with his own. He's horrible. And so this week he decided it was time to lecture liberals on what it means to be a liberal and explain why he's never, ever, 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 ever going to vote for Bernie Sanders ever again. Ever, period. Not again, just never. And I pulled out two little things in my post, which you're more than welcome to read. One is the David Brooks story about where he got to become a conservative when he was a little boy. And I think David Brooks has some real serious daddy issues. I think that's what's going on here just a little bit. And I pull something from the late, great Stephen Gilliard from 17 years ago about what it means to be a fighting liberal.
Mm.
And you know what? If it weren't for liberals, you'd be living in a dark and evil country right now.
Right.
You know, we'd be a German satellite at this point. Conservatives are the fucking brown shirts in this story. And David Brooks will side with a genteel form of fascism every time. And if it really is all hands on deck, and it really is everyone, we need to take down the fascist Republican government because they have destroyed democracy and they're about to put their imprint on this country forever, then I don't want to hear another goddamn word from any never-Trumper about how Democrats run their primaries. Believe me, I have stated repeatedly my own serious objections to the way the Democratic primary process has been run to date.
Mm-hmm.
I have my favorite candidates. You have your favorite candidates. Here's one thing I think we can all agree on. If you voted Republican up until 5 minutes ago, if you were a Republican operative or support person, or you were on television or had an op-ed column with conservative after your name up until 5 minutes ago, you have no goddamn business saying a goddamn word about how Democrats conduct anything. You wrecked your party. So turn your ass around and go fix it, or get in the boat with the rest of us and do some hard work. But whatever you do, shut up about how Democrats are doing their business. Because none of your goddamn business.
Or go tweet about sports for the rest of your life.
No, they don't pay David Brooks to tweet about sports.
Yeah,
they pay him to tweet about politics and religion, and in between some horrible, mealy-mouthed, maudlin bullshit about America and the American dream and bipartisanship and so on and so forth. And the other end of the spectrum, by the way, not the other end of the spectrum, but you might remember. I also wrote a little post this week about one of the shocking revelations that the Trump administration has revealed is that Tom Friedman still has a job.
Yeah,
I had because I used to write about Friedman and Andrew Sullivan and David Brooks all the time to the point of it bored me. And I managed to put Tom Friedman out of my mind for a long time. And then he got on his hobby horse this week and did his thing to the point where it really is a fight between Sulzberger family pets, Friedman and Brooks, over who can have the most horrible take on what we should do about politics. David Brooks is, I'm never voting for Bernie Sanders, ever, ever, ever. I'm taking my toys and going home. Tom Friedman's column was, here's what we should do. And we should take little bits of every person I like or things they've said or speeches they've said or whatever. We should take a little bit of Mitt Romney and a little bit of Michael Bloomberg or a lot of Mike Bloomberg because he's short and he's rich and I like that. And some Elizabeth Warren and stitch together sort of a Franken party, out of all the pieces that I think are cool. And that's the way you build a giant coalition to make everybody happy.
And what he means by that is grand bargain, too, yes, right?
He means his and his party. And I point out in the post I wrote this week also is that he does this all the time. He and David Brooks are every 6 to 8 months write another fucking column about how a third party will save us, a new party will save us, a centrist party will save us, a consensus party will save us. None of which has ever happened or is even ever close to happening.
Well, it's going to be funded by Mike Bloomberg.
Yes.
And that's right. It's to protect the banks. That's what it's for.
Well, in fact,
my bank stocks are the most important thing in America. That's the message.
I pull up an old article from, I forget which year it was. It was from the Columbia Journalism Review from 2011. They're talking about this persistent, creepy fetish that, 2011, mind you, that Tom Friedman has for his ideal third party. And his ideal third party, they quote, is like, it's time for Barack Obama to get some sort of fantasy vice president. And they say, Michael Bloomberg, perhaps? it is something he just does over and over and over again. And at some point, it's like his critique of the Iraq war. At some point, it becomes ridiculous.
Yeah.
And at some point, any newspaper that had any self-respect would bench his ass, would pension him off. But he just runs naked and wild through the pages of the New York Times every goddamn week saying stupid shit like this. And it's like the Sulzberger family died and left the paper to a dog. And the dog doesn't know anything except repeating the same thing over and over and over again. So this week, I believe Bret Stephens had a similar bullshit take in the New York Times. David Brooks has his take and Tom Friedman has his. Look, here's what we need to do. Take 20% Michael Bloomberg and 12% Bernie and 8% Elizabeth Warren, and Elizabeth Ocasio-Cortez can do this. And Mitt Romney would make a great commerce secretary. And he's really just seriously
to protect the bank stocks. Yep.
Yes. And he's playing with toys. He's playing with army soldiers.
And Driftless means Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Just
yes, I do.
So we're clear.
Okay. I blur my words sometimes. But he's playing with army soldiers in his giant rich boy backyard.
Yeah.
Here's something to be cool. Look, we'll take Batman and we'll take the Joker and we'll take
and Spider-Man.
Superman and then we'll get some people from the Marvel universe and it'll be really cool and we'll have a super great good time. Right, everyone? And anyone who is, you know, paid by him or beholden to him or terrified that he's going to yank their chain will say, oh, yeah, absolutely. Again, which is what he has something in common with Mike Bloomberg.
Hey, Driftglass, you wanted to give out an award this week.
I did.
The There Is No One More Oppressed Than Me award. We gave this out last week as well.
Yes.
Right?
Well, it was self-evident who the most oppressed person was last week.
Yeah.
It was poor Rod Blagojevich. who suffered mightily at the hands of Pontius Pilate and was buried and rose from the dead and came back to screw up Illinois politics yet again, who had a press conference to talk about how oppressed he was and how awful he was and how horribly he was treated, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This week, the award goes out to Mark Halperin, who showed up in some basement on some panel in some discussion group where, according to the reporter in The Nation, the audience was made up almost entirely of the public relations firm that sponsored the event.
Yeah.
So you know it's good.
Yeah.
To talk about how – and there were three or four reporters there. That's it. And he was there to talk about how awful cancel culture is and how unfair it is and how, you know, there must be a way for someone like me to get back into the good graces of the public. And yes, what I did was wrong, but really – depriving me of the ability to have a job and get health care for my children is so cruel and unfair.
Oh,
and
you mean like with Medicare for All? Is that what he's talking about? No.
Here's the thing. First of all, let's remember that Mark Halperin was terrible at his job.
Well, it was great news for John McCain.
It was. It's always great news for John McCain. My favorite is him doing bouncy on in the Trump helicopter, looking just so happy to be flown around. Mark Halperin was just awful at his job.
He gave a trophy to Ted Cruz for being the first candidate to announce in 2012 that he was running for president.
Yeah.
That was Mark Halperin's way of being insider beltway. Yeah.
Well, Mark Halperin would appear, if I'm not mistaken, on either Glenn Beck or Sean Hannity's show. And, you know, he was always considered one of the good ones by those guys.
Yeah.
So I cannot emphasize enough how really, really horrible Mark Halpern was at his job.
Well, maybe he wants a job on the Blaze, though.
Well, maybe he does.
You know,
my point being really, really objectively horrible at your job is never enough to get you fired from your job if right. you are in the media club. You have to do something else. You have yep. to get caught sexually predating right. on lots
with your
of women.
Penis out in an elevator
yes.
threatening then, a woman's job. What about all the jobs that he threatened while he was doing that?
You know, if you're going to drag, if you're going to split hairs, if we're going this yeah. is why liberals are so hated, Lou Gal, because there it's never enough. You're not, and all the millions and millions and millions he made from Bloomberg.
Ironically,
the media corporation, all the privilege he had. He wrote a shitty book that nobody bought because nobody yeah. wants to hear from Mark Halpern ever again. He has friends. He has friends mm-hmm. in the media. Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski keep trying to feed him table scraps. Mm-hmm. You know, let's get him yeah. back on the air. And everyone, no. Well, let's yeah. have a special online thing where we'll listen to his opinion. And you want to shake them and say, why are you so fucking hell-bent on this one guy? And I think the answer is because – if they can do it to him, they can do it to anyone. If Mark Halpern can lose his place at the trough, then for whatever reason, then none of us are safe. We need to make sure that once you're inside the charmed circle, that nothing can cast you out. And that once you're cast out, you're out for, like we used to call it, a full Halpern. 1 month. I mean, when Newt Gingrich was being groomed over and over again as the next great American political commentator by David Gregory. Mm-hmm. Every so often, Newt Gingrich would say something incredibly incendiary or racist or awful, and David Gregory would have to ignore him for a month, and he'd sit on the bench, and then he'd bring him right back. And this is the procedure. You do horrible shit.
I'm going to add another layer to this conversation, though, that I think is very timely. This week's mess of a debate and how we just utterly blame CBS for being terrible. And I mean, come on, selling a Mike Bloomberg ad during the debate to Mike Bloomberg is just wrong. They did a terrible job moderating.
And the Medicare for All.
It was failed.
And the Medicare for All will kill us all. there was an ad in the middle of there about how Medicare for All will just kill everyone.
Yeah.
That
lobbying organization. Yeah. But there was a moment in the debate where Elizabeth Warren brought up with Bloomberg this accusation that has been witnessed by a man, so it might be true, men out there.
Who knows?
Who knows? She has an NDA. So, but this claim that a pregnant woman within the Bloomberg organization faced workplace discrimination. Mm-hmm. And the reviews that came out from men, including Chris Matthews, was that this felt like a thud. It was not a thing she should have brought up. It made her look angry, which, right. Apparently never supposed to look angry, Elizabeth Warren, God forbid. The Halpern thing, the Bloomberg thing, and the Warren thing is all the mainstream media underestimating how angry women are.
Yes. Yes.
And women don't tweet about their pregnancy discrimination. They just don't.
No.
You want to keep your job. You want to keep your head low, and you hope that you won't be demoted or lose your job over pregnancy, even though that's against the law. Companies violate that law all the time. And Mike Bloomberg's response to Elizabeth Warren was so telling. He said two things in response to her statement. You know, there was a woman who's got an NDA. Who there's a witness, and apparently Mike Bloomberg said in response to this woman being pregnant on the job and needing to look a certain way, the words "kill it" came up.
Right.
That's the claim.
Yeah.
And Mike Bloomberg's response to Elizabeth Warren was twofold. One is about Elizabeth Warren's own story of facing workplace discrimination for being pregnant. Well, that would have never happened in New York City under me.
Uh-huh.
Mike Bloomberg was mayor of New York City in 2002, And federal law had been changed in 1978 to ban workplace discrimination against pregnant women. So,
and Mike Bloomberg personally passed it in 1978.
He bought all of the House members that he claims he purchased during the debate as well. That was a fun line.
That was a fun line. Yep.
The other thing that Mike Bloomberg said was, "If she heard me that way, I'm sorry."
Yeah. Yeah, if I offended you.
That is gaslighting boss talk that every woman heard in that debate, who listened to that mess of a debate, when you hear Mike Bloomberg say that, every woman has had a boss like that, when management comes down and says, what were you talking about? You know, did you mention her tits? Are you, you know, behaving in a way that damages our reputation in the workplace? Well, if she heard it that way, I'm really sorry. She heard it a certain way I didn't intend.
You know how chicks are.
It's bullshit.
Yeah.
And so this is the thing with Halperin, with, you know, Mika Brzezinski. Well, why can't we give him a chance to apologize?
Come on, people.
You don't understand how angry and damaged every woman has been through this in the workplace. Every single one has been through something where they've been talked to in a certain way or touched in a certain way or told something. And it doesn't have to be, I closed the office door and raped her. It doesn't have to go to that extent ever. No. It can go to, you know, hey, sugar tits or whatever. Every woman's been through it, been through being made uncomfortable while at work because you are a woman.
Yes.
And that anger is fueling our politics today. Under the surface, women are not tweeting about it. Women are not Facebooking about it. They're just stewing.
Yeah.
And let's hope that turns into I think it has turned into action. I think that's one reason we had 40 seats won in the House of Representatives. I think that's why women are getting elected all over the place, is people have had it. And
I hope so.
The other thing that just floors me in this whole discussion is any discussion in Medium blogs or, you know, the ladders or whatever, saying, well, men don't know how to behave anymore. Three little fucking words. You're at work.
Yeah, I don't know why this is so hard to understand.
It's not a cocktail bar. It's not a strip club. Unless you're working in a strip club.
No.
You know, even if you're working in a strip, men who work in a strip club behave better than some men do in office spaces.
Usually because there are armed men who make them do
that. There's cops around. Yeah.
You know what? Here's
and a bouncers.
Thought.
Yes.
Let's put bouncers in every office in America.
Right. To bounce you out of there the minute you say sugar tits. Yes.
We'll just be walking up and down the aisle and go, hey, mister, why don't you just step outside for a little while?
That's what we need is, you know, 400-pound guys with a stick saying, you know, buddy, you need some air. Let's go.
Yeah, let's go. Let me buy you a drink, okay? Because I think you've had too much. It's time for you to go home. But it's 10 o'clock.
I called you a cab.
Yeah. Then I guess you're fired, huh?
Yeah, right.
Well, and the other thing that just specifically to Elizabeth Warren was this mystification about why she didn't use her superpowers, because, you know, she has superpowers, super Wiccan powers, to take Bernie Sanders out instead of Mike Bloomberg.
I love Charlie Pierce on this, that somehow it was her job. It's her job to take out Bernie Sanders.
Right. That's her job. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. It might. Let me explain this real slow for the political cynics out there who are like, don't understand how people of good conscience behave in a public place.
Right.
Maybe Elizabeth Warren, as she said a million times, actually agrees with most of what Bernie Sanders says.
Yeah. She's in a lot of his policies and admitted that they're his ideas. Yeah.
And maybe she's a little bit sick of every time they sort of scale back their stuff or they come into closer alignment. Some of his followers trash her for it, which she did mention. But that's a follower problem. That's not a leader problem. That's not Bernie does not do that. Maybe she just thinks she would be better at implementing them. She would be better as a president than Bernie Sanders would be, which is an honest disagreement, which is why they're both in the race. Maybe she thinks the real problem, the real glaring, superating boil on the ass of American democracy is standing 5 feet to her right, and his name is Michael Bloomberg.
Yep.
Because he's got $60 billion and he's an asshole and he thinks he can buy an election. And he is everything she can't stand about politics and banking and privilege and all that and corruption. Yep. And he is her wheelhouse.
Yep.
So a person of good conscience who has been fighting against, the oil industry, let's say, if they were running against an oil executive, might want to take that person on because that is what they believe in. Mike Bloomberg, as I said, is her wheelhouse. It doesn't surprise me that she was gloves off mostly Bernie Sanders because they tend to agree on things. What
right.
does surprise me is that all the other moderates in the race, if you want to go after Bernie Sanders, go do it. He's standing right there.
Yeah.
And to a certain extent, they did, but the debate was such a shouty, shout, shout mess that...
The CBS debate this week CBS is the one you're talking
was
about.
Was just a mess. The moderators had failed. And I've been at meetings like this where leadership just falls apart and everyone's shouting and everyone's trying to get to the cream cheese and everyone's wants to argue about their shit and no one's running everything. And oftentimes I am tempted to step into a leadership role where there's a vacuum. And then I realize there's no percentage in that for me.
Right. You're not going to get your way by banging a gavel and saying, let's come to order. Right. No.
And everyone there had a reason to shout over everyone else because everyone's applying for the same job. And so there's no structure to it. So everyone is going to try to outdo everyone else. When there's no rules, it's a scrum for who gets hold of the conch and the talking stick. And since there were no rules, everyone made a grab for it. And it turned into a hot mess. Now, there were good moments there. I admit there were people who did a better job than others. I thought, for example, Joe Biden's answer about his Catholic school training was a nice touch.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I thought that this is something that didn't happen, but should have. Bloomberg was always 2 minutes away from his please clap moment.
Yeah.
He's sad. But when you rent your own cheering section, it doesn't really matter, does it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Our friend of the pod, Frangela Duo, pointed out something on Twitter I'd like to mention, which is would you expunge the records of the black and brown people that you harassed into jail? Mike Bloomberg talked about record expungement and nobody took up the bat and said, wait a minute, how many of those people are in jail because of you, motherfucker?
Right.
And so it was a moment missed. I thought, Amy Klobuchar's answer about the coronavirus was good.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Mayor Pete name-checking his spouse as a teacher was a nice touch.
Yeah,
he also had some pretty clever answers that were pretty clearly scripted, but he is good at scripted ad-libs in the same way that Bloomberg is horrible at it.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Elizabeth Warren did nothing to make me doubt that she would be a very good president. And Bernie Sanders is Bernie Sanders. He is, for me, is... his most effective when he uses humor and calmly explains, as one would to a slow child, why certain things are the way they are and why they need to be fixed and why the current system is broken.
Yeah.
That works for me.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was just, it was a, what do they say about hockey game? There was a brawl and a hockey game broke out.
Yeah.
This is a food fight and occasionally a little debate poked through, but that's it. And
really, we should go to and run all the ads you want, but we should go to town halls.
We should.
The CNN town halls this week were really good, and people got to ask questions and see the candidates. I am tired of hearing Elizabeth Warren's hearing aid story, but I'm really wired into politics and watching it all the time. And if you're a South Carolina voter who hasn't paid attention before, then you got to hear that story again. But you got to hear it without interruption or hand raving or a commercial from Mike Bloomberg. You got to hear it. So I think those town halls are a much better way to look at the candidates. And you'll still get clips from those on the internet and people will see them. And you can get zingers through. You can do all kinds of things as a candidate with those town halls that are much less messy.
Well, and I was suggesting, I was on the Nicole Sandler show today, or this week.
Yes.
And we sort of went over some of the same material, but I would love to see a sort of a seated so everyone doesn't have to stand at a podium and have to pee for 2 hours.
Right, right.
A seated round table discussing one issue. Mm-hmm. You know, climate change got no coverage at all in this debate.
Right.
I would like to see them sitting in a circle, drum or no drum, I don't really care. Maybe smoking pot, that'd be great. You know, whatever's available, whatever your recreational, you know, of choice is, I don't really care. And talk about one subject, just one subject for an hour. I think that'd be a healthy public grown-up debate. I have never missed the League of Women Voters more than I missed them during this debate, because it was such a clearly crass commercial enterprise. You know,
and having morning show hosts, you know, who are used to doing, I don't know, fashion shows or whatever they do in the morning shows, I just don't think that makes it serious.
No. Oh, they gave up right away. They just saw, this is going off the rails. Well, what the hell? Let's just let it run. They had rules. They didn't enforce them. It was a hot mess. Everyone agrees it was a hot mess. And it was just an embarrassment. And democracy is way too important to be left in the hands of game show type tactics like that.
Exactly. Exactly. Where do you want to go from here? Do you want to talk about the forum in Springfield that you went to this morning?
Yeah, I was at a forum this morning, Young, Successful, and Black in Springfield. I'm none of those. So it was something for me to enjoy. I knew a lot of the people there. I knew a lot of the people in the audience. And it was extremely interesting to have four young, successful African-Americans on a panel talking about their lived experience, talking about their family, talking about what brought them to this place in their life, the importance of church and the importance of school and 4-H and what it's like to be the
Was this a business panel or a political panel? Or what?
It was a success panel. It was just one of the gentlemen is the head of the Black Chamber of Commerce in Springfield.
Okay.
He's also on the panel of the Citizens Club, which is the thing that sponsors these civic sort of discussion groups every month. Mm-hmm. And he got them and persuaded them, and they didn't have to do any arm bending. This was just an idea that was long overdue to have.
I think you just dropped a bomb in the middle of our podcast. It's important for people to understand why there's a Black Chamber of Commerce in Springfield.
There is a Black Chamber of Commerce in Springfield.
It's not segregation.
No.
Black Chamber of Commerce is there to support the growth of Black businesses by Black business owners.
Yes.
It is a self-started organization of Black businessmen.
And women. One of the things he was on the panel, he was not the moderator, but one of the things he did was have everyone in the audience who came up through the ranks, who was in a leadership position, who was African American, who, et cetera, stand up in the audience. There were 40 people, 30 people standing up. And he said, people who want to complain in this town that we're not active, we're not involved, we're not in touch, all of us are exhausted because we all sit on every board because we're never allowed to say no, because once you say no once, they'll never ask you back again. So, and everyone talked about their grandmother and talked about the important adult in their life and the youth programs. And it was just an incredibly impressive group of people talking about how they have come to this place in their life and how exhausted they are because they are working all the time.
Yeah.
Because their parents were like, you have to be twice as good as everybody else. You have to succeed. Right. And there's no excuse, but working harder. Two things that jumped out at me, many things that jumped out at me, but two I'll mention here. One is this frustration with mentioning something over and over again, and then a year later some white person says it and it becomes a heroic epiphany that everyone gathers around. Like, and you're sitting there going, wait a minute, did I just say that like 17 times over the last 2 years and nobody paid any attention because I was invisible? Very much like women in the workplace and harassment. They're just, it doesn't exist because I choose not to see it. A second thing that jumped out at me was when people were talking about Barack Obama as president and talking about their mom, you know, crying and everyone, you know, just weeping with joy. And one woman said, but her grandmother did not react that way. Her grandmother was not impressed or was not, you know, overwhelmed. And when asked, she asked her granny why, and her grandmother said, first of all, she was afraid of what was going to happen to him.
Yeah.
Because she says, you know, I've lived in this country. I know what this country's like, and I'm terrified for him. Secondly, she was afraid of the backlash that was going to come after he left office.
So once he was no longer president, she was afraid of the backlash.
Yeah. And now
she was right.
She was right. She's absolutely right. And people who thought, well, we're over it. Not over it, but we've turned a corner. Mm-hmm. No, no, he didn't.
She knew better than that.
Yeah, yes. she right. damn well, because she lived the experience of, we made a little progress, and then white folks just came in and tore it all down because they mm-hmm. couldn't tolerate the idea of us being equal, of us succeeding. It was just in their bones. Now I'm just giving you my impression of what she said. Mm-hmm. But it was a really wonderful panel. It was well attended. It was a delight to see. But that lived experience of people who are leading in their community and are invisible to everyone else because it's just part of the narrative that there are no black leaders.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people who want to believe that, you know, that we're making progress, I'm one of those people who want to believe it. But the lived experience is, yeah, but man, it can all be taken away from you so fast.
Yeah.
So fast.
I think that's something that we have to address in the Democratic Party as far as how we handle the primaries as a yeah. party.
Yes.
Because the way South Carolina is being portrayed and advertised as the black primary.
Yeah.
It's segregation. It's segregation yeah. By calendar. That's yeah. what it is.
Yeah.
And Nevada aside, which is a very diverse community, very diverse electorate, this really is, to me, a segregationist calendar that we're dealing with. We have the white primaries at the front. We have a black primary. This is when African-American people are going to speak. Well, what about the African-Americans in Iowa? What about, yeah. you know, it's yeah. not, we need a calendar that allows all of us to have a say, at, you know,
early
within a diverse party.
Yes. Oh,
and this is going to have to be, we're always adjusting things. You know, the Democratic Party always fixes what happened, what was wrong with last time, mm-hmm. this time, and we fix it. And then those rules that were changed last time aren't good enough for this time. And
right.
You know,
unfair. They're unfair.
They're unfair now. So,
well, again, we don't, since our primary is in December or January, is
no,
it?
Pretty sure. March 17th.
March 17th. Yeah. None of this applies to us because, well, I do have one rule though. My mm-hmm. one rule is it's always been my rule my entire life. Unless you personally rally in my state repeatedly and personally rally in my city repeatedly and come to my home and give me a goddamn cookie, I can't vote for you. Ah. I just can't. I can't do it. You know, I'm kidding. I've gotten feedback, positive feedback from people who said, look, I never met Hillary Clinton. She never came to Minnesota. She didn't rally in my city. I still voted for her. Shut the fuck up about needing to have a cookie.
And there are states that don't have primaries at all. You know, right. that just select their delegates from the state Democrats within the state and they just don't. So anyway, I've given up worrying about the Democratic nomination for Lent.
Yeah,
I may come back to it sooner rather than later. But
we have a plan to worry about. Breaths, you know?
Yeah, we have a lot of other things to worry about. That's yeah. right. Yeah. So, and we're going to talk a lot about coronavirus in the news roundup, which is now. Let's do it.
Well, and the CDC warned that the spread of the coronavirus in the United States appears to be, quote, inevitable, saying Americans should, quote, prepare for the expectation that this might be bad. While Trump said that the coronavirus is, quote, going to go away, maybe very soon, quote, like a miracle, or maybe not. We'll see. Trump attempted to downplay the risk, saying the virus is, quote, very well under control in our country. We think they'll be in very good shape very, very soon. Bullshit.
He's surrounding himself by yes men and evangelicals who are promising him that, you know, he's God's chosen president.
Yeah.
And so there's going to be a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
And he is so susceptible to believing any good news about him. So it's a dangerous time. Acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney, isn't he also management and budget as well?
Yes, he is. He's acting a lot of things these days.
He accused the press of peddling false narratives about the administration scrambling to deal with the coronavirus. Let's blame everybody else. That's a good idea. Yeah.
And because we live in a globalized society with global supply chains, global stocks fell as fears about the impact of the coronavirus continued to mount. German's DAX fell by 5% before leveling out, while Tokyo and Shanghai closed at 3.7 loss. This is not a stock program, but it's bad. The S&P is on track for the market's worst week since 2008 financial crash. And Donald Trump blamed the stock market drop on Bernie Sanders.
And Nancy Pelosi said, let's not be silly.
Yeah. Sorry, too late. Too late, Nancy. The, yeah. The real plague is called the Republican Party.
Honestly. Yeah. Mick Mulvaney and Don Jr. and Laura Ingraham are all accusing Democrats of trying to weaponize the coronavirus to make Trump look bad. Jr. said they just want to stop the winning.
Yeah.
The winning, let's, in the midterms, you know, the winning.
Let's all get in the Wayback Machine and go back to talking about what Donald Trump was saying about Barack Obama.
Yep.
During the Ebola crisis, when Absolutely. Barack Obama mobilized resources and Barack Obama set up a special unit inside Homeland Security, all of which Donald Trump has torn down because the black guy did it, and we can't have that here. Of course, Republicans don't have any memory of anything that happened before yesterday, so that's all lost on them. There is a whistleblower who alleges that the Department of Health and Human Services, quote, improperly deployed more than a dozen workers to coronavirus quarantine locations who were not properly trained or equipped to operate in a public health emergency situation. They sent the dopes out to deal with a plague. So typical of Donald Trump stuff.
The White House instructed government health officials and scientists to get approval from Mike Pence's office before speaking publicly about the coronavirus outbreak. Yes. Yeah.
We're gonna pray the plague away. The Trump administration has indefinitely postponed a seawall to protect New York City 6 weeks after Donald Trump mocked the idea.
I thought that was under construction already.
Well, nope, I guess not.
Well, he's at war with New York State over immigration, so he's willing to withhold law enforcement grant money.
And because they want to sue him in court
and
take all his money away. So, yeah.
And on that note, a federal appeals court ruled that the Trump administration can withhold law enforcement grant money from so-called sanctuary cities and states that don't cooperate with Stephen Miller's immigration ideas.
Yeah, that's really dangerous. That's really, really dangerous. That is that now you have the ability to turn the entire federal government into an instrument of Donald Trump's revenge.
And re-election campaign.
Yeah.
Yep.
In a pure George W. Bush move. The White House has hired Jason Bacon, that's a real name, he's a 23-year-old college senior, to be one of the top officials of the Presidential Personnel Office.
That is very W.
It really
him,
is.
Isn't it?
If you were alive and aware during the Iraq War period, you might remember that people who ran T-shirt stands and ice cream trucks were put in charge of the banking system, the traffic system in Iraq after the war. Because they could answer one simple question. Where do you stand on Roe versus Wade? Oh, two questions. And are you a contributor?
Yep.
That was it. That's how we managed to completely wreck American foreign policy prestige. That's how we managed to destroy the nation of Iraq for a generation to come by doing exactly what Trump is doing now. Bush did exactly the same thing Trump is doing now.
The director of the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement suppressed guidance from the agency's engineers when it overhauled a well drilling safety rule. Because science isn't what you need, apparently. I am losing my mind over this stuff.
Yeah. It's everywhere you look. Everywhere you look, there is some Trump stooge rolling back public safety things, union safety things, air safety things, physics, science, because it makes them look bad or because the black guy did it.
For no other reason. Or because they lose money if they do it that way.
Yeah. And they're lobbying. At the other end of the pipeline,
they're lobbyists,
looting the government into their own pockets. And once it all crashes, and it will inevitably crash, some poor goddamn Democrat's going to have to come in a clean house. And as they try to do so,
Don Jr. Is going to be on Fox and Friends bitching about it.
Jr. will be on Fox and Friends, and Mitch McConnell will be in the Senate making sure that nothing gets done, that all the fires keep burning, and then we'll blame the next Democratic president for Donald Trump's failures. Donald Trump accused Adam Schiff, without any evidence whatsoever, of leaking classified information about Russian election interference to the media.
Trump dismissed the intelligence community's assessment that Russia was meddling in the 2020 presidential election, calling it hoax number seven. So he's numbering them now?
Yeah, he doesn't count. He can't higher than four. So it's just pull a number and a word out of his ass. He has a 40-word vocabulary. So whatever the Mad Lib is today is what it is. And I am so mad at Republicans. I am so
I know, livid.
I so loathe Republicans now. I really, this is, if you wanted to trigger a bunch of libs, congratulations, you've succeeded. I have absolutely lost any respect or patience with anyone with an R after their name. Don't want to hear a fucking word about you. And if you would like to start a fight in public by pinpricking me with some smart ass comment, you go right ahead, because I am loaded for bear and I'm coming for you. Now, in our local Democratic congressional primary, which you know that we are working for Betsy Dirksen Lonergan, I'm phone banking for her. She was our candidate last time. You can see our lawn sign if you drive past our house. She does have an opponent, but the race is very, very lopsided.
And the reason we're talking about this is several listeners wrote us about a little blip in the news cycle that included this race. Yeah. So.
And we thought we'd mention it because it should never be mentioned again, ironically. Her campaign has more money on hand when last I checked than her Republican incumbent opponent. And then she has the National Party on her side. She's an Emily's List choice.
Right.
She has Dick Durbin's organization behind her. So, you know, she's very well staffed and very well funded.
She's a former Dick Durbin staffer. She's got legislative experience. She knows how a bill gets to be a law. She knows how to write bills.
Yeah.
And she is, as the times that I have been at town halls and meetings with union people and so forth, where she's been there, she has been a careful listener, a polite person, and someone who seems like quite the technocrat, like just somebody who really gets it that, okay, we may need a bill to do this and let's work on that. And she's not high drama at all.
No.
And I think she'd make a great congresswoman.
I do too. I wouldn't volunteer for her and I wouldn't vote for her.
Yeah.
Her opponent is named Stephanie Smith, who has about $6,000 in the bank and about enough supporters to fill out a hockey team. So it is incredibly lopsided. And so what some of her supporters tried to do was something very desperate to get some national media attention. They're stalking her campaign. They blocked her in her car and started Lonergan. Screaming at her.
They screamed at Lonergan.
They blocked Lonergan into her car and they were screaming at her and live streaming the whole thing on Facebook. And what they managed to do was get national media attention for about 48 hours. Really bad national media attention. And their response was, well, then come debate us. Because that was the whole point. The point was, you know, they've already done one debate together. They're going to lose. They're going to lose very, very badly. And the only hope they have is to get more attention with them.
More free TV time.
Yeah. And I understand.
Free local TV time. Yeah.
When you're losing and you know you're going to lose and it's that bad and you believe in your candidate and you're a zealot.
And the primary is 17 days away.
Yeah. You know, you do some desperate things. You start throwing haymakers to try just attract some attention, a couple more dollars, anything you can. So the only thing I have to say is this is a blip on the radar. It doesn't reflect on the generally speaking Democratic politics. I believe they had some like Bernie Sanders merch they were selling on their site. It does not reflect on the Bernie Sanders campaign
at all.
This is just a small local, horribly lopsided primary campaign with one of the people desperately trying to get some media attention, and their people got out of hand, and they shouldn't have.
Yeah,
and that's all I have to say about it. It's sad, but politics brings out passions in people that sometimes cannot be contained.
There you go. Hey, each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Bootsy. And Bootsy was sent in by our friend Dogfaced Herman, who we love so much. Mm-hmm. I hear from Dogfaced Herman a lot with his sheep on his farm. They're doing well. Dogfaced Herman wrote and said, finally, I got a picture of Bootsy. Bootsy is the barn cat over at the Soul Homestead Farm. Most days, Bootsy walks away when he sees me and the camera, but this time he allowed me to take his picture. And my response to that, well, is of course he did, because he was sitting in a sunny sunspot and he's not going to move and wake up and move for you and your camera. Of course not. Anyway, Dogfaced Herman said it was such an honor to get his picture. The one picture I wish I had of Bootsy was during sheep day at the farm. There were lots of people in the barn watching the sheep get sheared. And there's Bootsy up in the hayloft, looking down with disgust, wondering to himself, what are all these animals doing in my barn? Bootsy has a job to do in that barn. I think we all know. You know, in addition to doing his job, he also enjoys eating freshly poured cat food, our fake sponsor. Whether you serve pet store perfection or dollar store dreck, your cat will sit on the kitchen floor or the barn floor and demand that the food they eat is only freshly poured. Freshly poured, freshly poured. Oh, my Lord, it's freshly poured. And you can visit Bootsy at our Facebook page or website, and you can send your internet kitty or other pet to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. This is not charity. This is our job and a labor of love, and we love you. So thank you so much for your donations. We have heard from a couple people this week who are waiting for their income tax refund to come and promise us a $5 donation out of that. Hey. We understand. Mm-hmm. We do understand that. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution. You can, too. See our website, proleftpod.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at proleftpod.com. Please share our show on social media, and thank you so much for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties went to go see The Invisible Woman last night. It's this horror movie starring Elizabeth Moss about a brilliant, joyful, highly qualified female presidential candidate who no one can ever seem to remember to mention.
I don't think that's what that movie is about, Driftglass.
Ooh, scary, scary.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey dovin. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2019-2020, DGBG Productions.